So I very typically like to select for Shmooze an actual concern or a shaila that a Talmud or a former Talmud brings to my attention. And today's not going to be any exception. That's the discussion that we're hopefully going to be having very soon. Comes from an experience I had very recently with not a Talmud of this yeshiva, he's actually a Talmud of another yeshiva. But there's an element to this that is this is going to be very unusual coming from me, I think. I think I project myself as being on the rationalist side of things. But I cannot help but look at what I'm about to show you as being something very eerie, very spooky, very non-rational. And you'll see what I mean in a moment, hopefully. Story begins with my meeting with, I went back before Pesach to America, and while I was there, you know, I took advantage, as I usually do when I go back there, to meet with Talmidim, and particularly Talmidim that have contacted me with specific issues. And there was this one particular young man who was feeling something about a certain lack of pride in being a Jew. That's like a summary of all the things he was throwing at me. I understood it that way. He didn't communicate that he was understanding the importance and the significance and the great schus it is to be a Jew. So I figured I'm going to really attack him from two modalities. I'm going to attack him with a reasoned, rational discussion of why one should be proud to be a Jew. And at the same time, and sometimes that's not enough, and often it's not enough, I wanted to get him through his emotions, through something that he could feel. So there is a particular song that inspires me. It's a song, and you have to hear the context of this song. It's a song that when I'm feeling sorry for myself or feeling not inspired to be a Jew, I listen to this, and almost instantaneously, it really changes my affect. It changes my whole attitude. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not making this up just for the story. It's really the truth. And it's also really true that this particular song, I presented to this guy before we started our discussion. I said, I want you to hear something. I want you to hear something. And I want you to know the story of this song. And I want you to feel it. And I thought, I imagined, very naively, actually, that the effect it has on me, it would have on him. So what's the background to this song? And I'm going to actually play it. I ran this by the Shishiva. It is Sphira, but this is a very, very moving, didactic purpose to this song. So it has the Haskam of Rabbi David. And we're going to hear it. But its meaning is so much more powerful in the context of who's recording it. It's recorded by somebody who is a young man who was whose family I was very close with. My family was close with from Teaneck, and that's the only identifying information I'm going to give at this moment. And it's a very, very wonderful family, an unbelievable family involved in Chesed, involved in being Marbitz Torah. One of these incredibly incredible families. And this young son of theirs, very, very unfortunately, at a young age, I mean, he was married, he had two young children. He developed a very horrible disease, ended up with a bone marrow transplant and chemotherapy. And he was such an incredible young man that a whole movement evolved from him. He was very, very well known as being always upbeat, happy, bitachon like no one ever saw. He was somebody that generated excitement about being a Jew. He was the perfect person to be singing the words you're about to hear. And it was that combination of this particular individual. I could see his face every time I hear these words. And this is, he recorded the song. It's him himself singing. And it's the combination of who this person was and what he had done. A real movement of people that were excited about being Jewish also because of him. And I'll just tell you the eerie part of this now, because I want you to... I had no idea I was deciding to do this song at this shmooze back then. I was assigned to this shmooze today over a year ago. I found out this week, because I had forgotten, in an email, that today's is your time. So, I mean, it's inescapable. So with all that in mind, I'm going to play this song. I was hoping to play this song. That hush
again. It's not playing on the
internet. No, it's my it's connection. Those words are unbelievable. What are the words saying? The words say, how fortunate we are, what a great Yerusha we have. For me, hearing it from him, who really embodied it, and he just gave off this tremendous appreciation of this, it's an unbelievable experience. Every time I hear it, I'm energized. For those who may know this individual, his name's Chaim Feigenbaum. It is his yahrzeit today, and there are many people at 2:00 that are going to be gathering at his keder that's in Beit Shemesh in Beis Holland. But as excited and as animated as I seem to be with this whole thing, I noticed that this young man that I was speaking to felt very different. He was almost smirking. I'm like having tears form in my eyes, and he's looking at me like, I think I'm like some kind of like easy nothing, you know, throw a song at me. Didn't mean anything to him. So I said to him, what's your problem? I said, what exactly is your problem? Why don't you realize how significant this really is? How significant it is and how great it is to be a Jew. I say, don't you daven every day? We say this, right? These words, every morning. We say, Halo kol ha-gibarim ka'ayin lefanecha v'anshei Hashem k'lohayu, etc. Aval nachtu amcha b'nei b'risecha b'nei Avraham. We're special, we're different. There's something special to being a Jew. And we end with Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu. What are you missing? What's your problem? So then it came out, finally. Finally I understood. Now this young man was in a secular college, and for the first time in his life, he was exposed to the world outside yeshivas in a serious way. And he had read an essay. There was an essay that was behind his feelings that were so different than mine. The essay was called We Are Not Alone. It was by Rav Menachem Kelman. But I just want you to know, what he read into this essay is, I think, a misread. So I'm going to share with you the way he understood this essay, and then I'll try to give my take on it, which is different. But it minimally explains where he was coming from. So I'll read just the sections that he underlined for me. We live on a planet which is one of many that orbit the sun. The sun itself is a star of no particular distinction, tucked into a galaxy of no particular distinction, Our Milky Way galaxy is part of a galactic cluster, which itself in turn is part of a supergalactic cluster, and so on and so on and so forth. We're this little tiny speck in the universe. Looking at the world this way, it became harder and harder to take Rashi, the first Rashi, very famous Rashi, Bereishis Bara, Bereishis, for Yisroel, for Torah going to Yisroel. That's why Hashem created the universe. So the author implies that, throws it into question, that Rashi. And then, and this is the part I really think got to this kid, looking at the billions of human beings who surround us, we discover that a huge percentage of them are no less moral, no less sophisticated than we are. The biblical authors, and to a great extent the rabbis of the Talmud, appear to have been convinced that the idolaters were brutal and corrupt. A religious deviation, moral corruption. But what happened when the Gentiles among whom the Jews lived and with whom they conducted business and with whom they often had social ties turned out to be very moral individuals, trustworthy in their personal dealings and sophisticated in their religious beliefs? What happens, this kid said to me, I've met many people here, many non-Jews. They're really nice. They're nicer than a lot of those Jews I used to hang with. Why do we think we're so special? Why we the Am HaNivcha? What's so great about us? Now, to be fair, that is not what Rav Kellner was trying to convey in his essay. What he really was conveying is something that I think is legitimate, but not quite this. And I want to contrast what I really think he was saying with what he's thinking and what we're going to say. He did have an agenda in this essay against a certain attitude. It's an attitude of people that really, really become chauvinistic in the most ugly way, meaning that Jews are far, far superior than everyone else, and non-Jews are not even people. And I'll show you how absurd this gets. We call it, in my family, there's a story, right? Anyone who meets anyone from my family asks them about this. The plant. It's called the plant story. What's the plant story? I had over at my house a young yeshiva bacher, and he was a patient of mine in the past. And I know that he had been through some very serious surgeries, and he had, at one point, shared a room with another family of non-Jews who were also going through the same type of congenital heart surgery. There was a lot of connection between the two families. They got friendly. Unfortunately, at the time he was over our house for Shabbos, he's telling me that, I think I even asked him, what happened to X, that family? And he said to me, oh, I got to tell you what happened. It's unbelievable. He said, the boy passed away. And he had wanted, obviously not in a halachic sense, to be Menachem Avil, but he wanted to pay his respects. They had become close. He wanted to at least call them, make a gesture. He wanted to even go over to visit the family. So he asked his Rebbe. And his Rebbe said, don't do it. And I'm saying, then his Rebbe learned Gittin from Darkei Shalom. What's going on? What kind of, why? And he said, I was really troubled by this, and I was telling the Rebbe, I felt very guilty. So the Rebbe said to me, quote, don't worry, they're just plants. So this is in front of my impressionable children that he's saying this. I go, what on earth are you talking about? What was your Rebbe talking about? What does that mean, they're just plants? Plants? Is that like some kind of like Christmas tree thing? Like, what do you mean by this? So what he did mean by it was something that just blew me away. There are, when people that discuss neshama is made up, there's different elements to the neshama. There's the nefesh tzamachas, the nefesh behemis, and then the highest neshama, chelek of akam yimal, right? Those are the parts of a neshama, right? Tzamachas is the neshama that gives us growth and movement. Behemis is animation, being alive, having a circulation. So he was actually, his Rebbe was telling him, guess what? Non-Jews only have the neshama of a plant. They're just nefesh tamachas. He wasn't even giving them the, you know, behemis. I couldn't believe it. But he had this kid not feeling horribly guilty and not being able to do it. Now, that's ridiculous, in my opinion. I mean, that was what this essay was combating. It was combating that attitude and the attitude of some people who think that the neshama of a non-Jew is really non-existent, so you could kill them, too. He had a whole diatribe against that. So that was really what the essay was about, but not to my friend over here. He still would not accept what I was saying and said that, no, I think I think the whole idea of Am Segula, Am HaNivchar, is a disgusting, elitist idea. Right? He was like becoming a philosophy major. He was fancying himself to really be holding. And he's going to tell me that. And he's going to like, he says, I think I have to reject the whole religion business. So I said, calm down. Calm down. You know, I put the music away. I said, all right, now this guy, you got to get serious. But you really feel this way. You really totally have no comprehension what Am Segula is about. You don't have any elementary understanding. That's what I told him. And I said, if you want to be intellectually honest, let's find out what it is. What really is Am Segula? Because it's nothing like what you think. And it's something that if you really listen and understand it, you'll understand why I'm so excited about that, those words and the idea and Ma Tov Chalkeinu and Ma Naim Goreli. So I said, let's start from the beginning. You're making a big mistake on one thing. Because we are Am Segula, because we are the Am HaNivchar, which is beyond question, it's absolute, it's mefurish in the Torah in several places, Ki Am Kadosh Ata L'Hashem Elokecha, Becha Bachar HaShem Elokecha, Liyuslo La'am Segula, Mikol Ha'amim Asher Pei Adam. It's not debatable. We are the Am Segula. It says so, black and white. And it has nothing to do with numbers and being, who cares that there's billions of people? The Torah addresses that. Lo meirubchem mikol amim chashak Hashem bachem, v'yivchor bachem ki atema me'at mikol amim. It has nothing to do with numbers, obviously. What is it? Ki me'avas Hashem eschem u'mishamrus ha'shvur. It's the shvur to the avos. It's all about something else. There's an ava that Hashem has for us, and we are the Am Segula, but it's nothing to do with any superiority, necessarily. You're thinking in terms of something that is actually a misunderstanding of the concept of Am Segula. Constantly say Atar Bar Chatan Mikol Ha'amim. That's for sure true, but you have to understand there's a difference, and it's a little subtle, between saying something is segula, singular, unique, different, special, and superior. Right? What is superior? I'll tell you what superior is. Superior is like the nonsense. My kids love to quote this to me. I don't want to go into too much detail because maybe I'll get into trouble one day for saying this, but that got everyone's attention. Always does. The bell curve. Anyone read the book The Bell Curve? Anyone hear that book? Now it comes to the book, but it's an interesting book. It's a book that like does a comparison of the IQs of different cultural groups, right? So a lot of people like, guess who came out on top, right? But that has nothing to do with Am Segula. It might be true. It might be true that we're less than 1% of the world population, 20% of the Nobel Prize winners, but none of this is related to Am Segula. So I don't really care whether we're superior or not. I'm not going to get into that debate. I think it's a stupid debate. It's irrelevant to me. Because when you really understand what Am Segula means, you won't care. It's not important, that issue. So where do we start? How do we understand Am Segula? Well, if you really want to understand any principle in Torah, you go to the Gedolim. So here one Gadol really hit what I think is an absolute premise for this whole discussion, and that's Rav Soloveitchik. A very, very famous board that Rav Soloveitchik developed that really starts the ball rolling and understanding what does it mean, Am Segula? And really headlines this idea that there's a tremendous difference between saying superior and greater and smarter, etc., that's what Am HaNivchar means, versus no, unique, different, special. And it has to do with, it starts by the Rav's analysis of the Sheish Tzachiros. Who here says the Sheish Tzachiros every day? Anybody? The Sheish Tzachiros that at the end of Shachris, a lot of people say it, I say it, right? The Bali Kabbalah promote it. And the Shla, and I think the Magen Avraham even says to say it. A lot of people say it. What are the Sheish Tzachiros? Anyone know? He must say it every day.
Remember Chida Egel, what happened to Miriam, and Zahor Yom
Shalom. Right, and whoa. You're obviously not a plant. Very nice. Now, what's special about the Sheish Tzachiros? So, why are those something that the Torah says Zachor constantly by them, and some people want to say every day and remember? Beautiful. What are they? These are fundamental, foundational events and ideas and beliefs of Yahadus. That's what they are. If you go through them, and they're very easy to remember. You know, you can remember them because they are walking you through the most fundamental ideas that a Jew should incorporate into his life every day. First, I'm going to go out of your order and out of the order it's presented because it helps me remember them. Right? The first one is Zachas Yom HaShabbos. What is that about? What fundamental idea? Hashem is the Borei Olam. Can't get more fundamental than that. L'man tisros yom tseischam eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem is not only the Borei, he's the Manhig. He's involved. He continues to be involved. He didn't just create the world and go away. He's continuing running the world. Right? What comes next? Matan Torah. Matan Torah, oh, revelation. There's nothing more fundamental than that. Sounding really good. Then what comes? B'chiyas HaMalek, the eradication of all evil. The ultimate. Right? That's very fundamental. What else is there? The Chayda Egel. The Chayda Egel is a little more complicated. There's various shitas exactly what this fundamental belief is. I like the Kuzari, the Ramban, the Beis Halevi. They all have this one idea that what it's about is understanding that even though there's a lot of opportunity for man to be involved, formulation of the Torah, and Tikkun Olam, and all those things, Hashem's the boss. Always remember, Kasher Tziva Hashem. That's the key. That's a very important yisod. And then, what's the last one? Chait Miriam. Chait Miriam. What's Chait Miriam about? How does that fit in with the top six? What is Chait Miriam? What was it? What was that about? No? What is everybody? Lashon Hara. Oh, now I get it. Right? Lashon Hara is up there. Forget Ritzicha, forget the Yisr Gzela. Lashon Hara, that's the key. Now, if I had an agenda today to talk to you about Lashon Hara, well, it's clear what direction I would go. I would say, you see? Lashon Hara is such a bad avera, it's up there with those. But I'm not heading there today, and I don't really believe that's what it is. It isn't that, you know, it's a horrible Isser. Of course, Lashon Hara is terrible. It is not up there with those, because that's not pshat. And this is how the Rav started off his fort. He said, what is, or incorporated into his book, what is this about? Why is Chait Miriam up there with the top six? So he said, well, you got to understand what Chait Miriam really was. It's not just Lashon Hara. It's not a simple aver of Lashon Hara. There's something bigger going on over there that is one of the foundational, fundamental ideas you need to have as a Jew every day. And what is that? So, well, the key is to understand its connection to the Chait HaMeragim. That's how the Rebbe explained it. He said, famous Rashi that says, why, Lama Nismach, why is the Chayt HaMeraglim that following on the heels of the Chayt of Miriam? Why? So what does Rashi say? They didn't learn their lesson, right? She was doing this Avera of, we'll call it what you think, Lashon Hara. And here they go, they didn't learn not to say Lashon Hara, so they went and said Lashon Hara about what? Oh, wow. So, you know, in third grade, that goes far, right? Don't say Lashon Hara, she said Lashon Hara, don't say Lashon Hara about the land's going to cry, right? But as we get a little more sophisticated, as we all in this room are, right, we realize that, you know, the land doesn't really have feeling, does it? No? Everybody please tell me, no, not really. Right? And aside from that, the only way the Meraglim were supposed to know about Lashon Hara being Asur is through Miriam, but what's the real message? So the Rav put together the following idea. He said, what you really need to understand first and foremost is the Chait of Miriam was something much larger than the idea of Lashon Hara. What was it? What exactly did she do wrong? So to make a long story short and capture it in synopsis form, Miriam had heard Tzipora upset. Tzipora was upset, right? The Torah says it was related to Tzipora. In what sense? Tzipora was upset because Moshe was separated from her, right? He was Porish Midarach Eretz. Moshe, of course, was involved talking, you know, with Hashem all the time. He thought he had to be Porish. So Miriam's hearing this, feeling bad for Tzipora. She meant well, right? And she says, wait a second. We're Nevi'im too. Aaron and I, we have Nevuah. We talk to Hashem, and we are not Porish from our Derech Eretz. We have normal family life. What's Moshe doing? Who does he think he is? And that was her mistake. That's what Hashem tells her. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You just made a mistake. And it has nothing to do with the fact that Moshe is greater than you. Moshe is greater than you. You accept that. Miriam did accept that. It has to do with the fact that you don't realize that Moshe is in a category unto himself. Moshe is a Navi Segula. He is a unique, special Navi. He's not the same kind of Navi you are. Right? Peh peh adaberbo. Umare velo bemare velo bechidos utmunos Hashem yabit. Of the Moshe is much different. He's qualitatively completely a different sugya. The Rambam in the Ikari Emuna, when he talks about Nevuah, that's one of the Ikari Emuna. A whole separate one is dedicated to Moshe, because Moshe is a completely different place. The fact that he's superior might be true, but it's irrelevant to this. What makes Moshe special is something else, is the qualitative difference of his nevuah.